Well, please take a seat, everyone. I'm going to invite Dave back up, and we're going to do a little bit of different things here. So we're just going to, if you want to chat to the person around you, I don't have a clever question, but we just need to get set up here. So maybe chat about your favourite meal over the weekend here and your least favourite meal. Okay, wow, good, excellent. So let me just talk you through what we're going to try to do in this little session. I don't have a poem prepared, I'm sorry about that. I should have asked Bron to do this last session, but we're going to do it with me instead. And what we're going to do, we've got no more talks from Dave, but what we thought we could do is spend the first little bit just having some questions from, I've got some questions that have come through via the text messages, flesh out a little bit of this, some of the things we've been thinking about, and then spend some time in groups a little bit later with the people around you, maybe 10 people, depending on how many people, and we'll have a few discussion questions, but also a time of prayer in those groups. And then the kids will come back in at the end, and we'll sing our last couple of songs together before lunch. That's where we're going to go. I thought I'd start with, I'm still getting these questions coming through and now everyone has my mobile, but you probably already had that from all the text messages I've been sending you anyway, asking you to do something for me. So I haven't had a chance to read them through, so some of them will be fairly random. But Dave, before I get into the questions, with you've spent a bit of time over the last couple of years in your role with evangelism at new churches, looking at churches around Australia, around the world, and thinking about how you've seen not just evangelism work. I guess there's a bit of a distinction between evangelism working and people becoming Christians. Can you share some of the things that you've noticed in a range of different churches, just in terms of, I know there's no silver bullet, or maybe there is, and if you have it, can you let us know?
Better than that, the reason I took the job where I work for the Anglican Church, blah, 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 is because actually I've worked at churches which see hundreds of people converted. So, and one of the reasons why that made me go, oh, actually I want to take on a new role to help other churches is simply that what I was able to observe over the years when my role at churches was I was the evangelism minister. So these would be big churches often which had the money to have an evangelism minister. Not every church can do that. But I also worked at smaller churches as well. But one of the things that was really clear was that the churches who see the most people converted actually do really similar things. So it's not a silver bullet, but it's like a bronze fist. Okay, like, it kind of works most of the time, and there's different ways that it applies itself and contextualizes itself, but there are similarities, and I want to say the first one, above all else, is that they are churches full of people who want to see people become Christians. Okay? Now, that's not actually a given, because a lot of us, I don't think, have come to terms with the fact that to be a church where you see people become Christians means change. I'm not saying change like theology. I'm not saying change, cancel everything, nothing like that at all. It means change, be ready to have more and more people amongst you. And that can be challenging and hard for us, because I'm, as an adult convert, I want to say I love church and I love Christians. I love church and I love Christians. And having more and more people in there is really, it messes it up sometimes. You know, it's difficult. But firstly, so the church is full of people who have a deep conviction, a heart conviction, that they want to see people saved because eternity matters more than anything else. And I think the Holy Spirit's at work in us, convicting us of that anyway, but that's actually a priority in the church. But you notice really amongst the, I'll put it this way, in the English-speaking, non-American evangelical world, I say non-American because America is Jupiter, okay? What they do is so bizarre that it's really not that applicable to us. But England, New Zealand, South Africa, Australia, blah, blah, that's normal people. I've met no Americans this weekend. If you're here, you are the best of us. We know that. But I want to say there are similarities in what they do. And so this is what's astonishing. Are you ready? The churches that see the most people converted do less better. So they're not churches with a million things on in the calendar. It's not about that. But they're churches that have realized that the more simple and easy it is for the church family to partner together in doing something evangelistic and bringing someone to somewhere where they're going to hear the gospel, the more simple and straightforward that is, the easier it is for everyone. So there's not one person in, just say it was St. Mark's, who's like, oh, should I bring them to this or that? You're like, there is no that. Okay, it's this. This is the thing. And the thing is either, no, it's not either, it's both. It's every Sunday at church, so that every Sunday is a good Sunday to bring someone. You've got to believe that. And I want to persuade you of that. The Bible tells us that when the God's people gather together in the heavenly realms, we are on display as the most glorious organization in the world. A church out in the boonies, in the sticks, with very, very few people. A bunch of old ladies meeting together with a minister once a month because he's doing the rounds around the place. To God, God looks at that and goes, that's my trophy cabinet. That displays my glory to the heavenlies. And that what happens on a Sunday is beautiful and special, even if the music sucks, which guess what? It doesn't here. If this is your weekend away, you lucky. So you want to go, hey, so people bringing non-Christian people to church on Sunday, and the other part is an evangelistic course. And I think in the past you guys have run Alpha, it could be running Discover Life. There's a bunch of them, and we can talk about those. But I want to say that in essence, those things work because the church family realize, oh, this isn't church doing something and I might get involved. Guys, you need to understand that statistically speaking, the people who as adults become Christians in Australia have, 90% of them have got one thing in common. You know what it is? They know a Christian. And that Christian has been implicitly or explicitly influential in their faith journey. And it usually looks something like this. Hey, our church is doing something where they're talking about Jesus. You want to come? No? Cool. Okay. Hey, my church is doing something where they're talking about Jesus. 25% of Australians indicate that they would be willing and open to an invitation from a Christian they know to explore the Christian faith. What's the problem? They don't wear T-shirts. We don't know who they are. Okay, 25%, that's 4 million people or thereabouts, 5 million people, 6 million people, whatever it is. It's a lot of people. However, you will face rejection from three. But are you willing to go through the three to find the one? You know, and unfortunately, those three might be six, that kind of thing. But it's the church family going, hey, I'm going to not invite, I'm going to bring invite. I'm going to bring people to something. They're going to hear about Jesus and it's churches being committed to that. It's so simple. I used to work at EV Church, which is a stone's throw from here. There's 3,000 people at that church, and that's in the Central Coast, Bogan Central. There's no particularly strong spiritual heritage there or anything like that. It's just a very simple church course, church course, church course, press repeat till you're dead. That's it. And it sees hundreds of people converted every year. So
I'm just going to probably ask the question. This is quite an important one just to drill down on, and you've already answered, but I think just distilling that a bit more, we did some, some health checks with last year, just looking at our numbers and just anecdotal things, and we counted really on our hand the number of people, adults, outside of children and youth, just because they were harder to gauge, who had become Christians in the last 12 to 18 months through the ministries of St. Mark's. And it would be probably on our hand, and we could... And you're saying that there are churches with a similar theology to ours at St. Mark's, and churches that are around that are seeing, let's say, hundreds of people or larger numbers. And I think sometimes we will say, well, God is sovereign, and so God has just chosen to bless that church with lots of people in the last 12 months, and maybe St. Mark's is not many. But you're saying it's not as simple as putting it down to the sovereignty of God. Can you flesh that out a little bit more in terms of the work that you've been doing, where you've been seeing similar kinds of churches?
Yeah. And when I say hundreds, forgive me, I don't want to be ridiculous here. I'm saying over decades, hundreds. Okay, I'm not saying, but, a good proportion every year. Yeah. It's a really important question. And here's the question I want you to just think about inside your mind. Is it possible to do bad evangelism? Yes, it's possible to do bad evangelism. For example, we're near Lake Macquarie. I don't live too far away. So I know the people around here. I know what they like. Okay, I know they're into rugby league. I know they're into water skiing and all sorts of bogan water sports and that kind of stuff.
You love your bogans, don't you?
Oh, I love bogans. That's the heartland of my ministry. So I could decide I'm going to put on an AFL shirt. I'm going to go to the street corner and get a big soapbox. I'm going to stand next to the JWs and I'm going to yell out, "Turn or burn! Turn or burn!" with a gospel verse around me saying John 3:16. Now, is it possible someone could become a Christian as a result of that? Yes, it is possible, actually. It's very possible. Is that good evangelism? No. Why? Because not many people get converted that way. Now, God has displayed over 2,000 plus years that the essential elements of evangelism must always remain the gospel proclaimed, call to respond, and repentance and faith. That's it. 70 years ago, Billy Graham, in a big sort of thing around the world, spoken away, huge, hundreds of thousands of conversions. Culturally speaking, things have changed, which doesn't mean the way people become Christians is different. It just means the way we engage people with the gospel is different. What works here might be different in, forgive the South Africans because I was challenging you guys, but Joburg or blah, blah, blah. But in essence, what we've discovered in Australia is the best way to get people engaging with the word over time is in the presence of other people, where they've got freedom to ask questions or freedom to shut up and say nothing if they want. And that means if it's possible to do bad evangelism, it's possible to do good evangelism. Now, what is it that distinguishes bad from good? Well, if the message is the gospel, that's what makes it evangelism. So we're saying the gospel, always there. But what makes it good is that we've given thought to how people are actually able to engage with the word. Now, can I prove this to you from the Bible? Acts chapter 14. If you've got a Bible there, check it out. If not, trust me, I'll read it from you and you can trust that I'm reading it accurately. This is the very first cross-cultural missionary trip. The Apostle Paul and Barnabas, they leave, they dust their feet off with the Jews and say, right, we're going to the Gentiles, and they travel. Now, they land at a place called Iconium, and funnily enough, they actually go to the synagogue straight away, even though they've turned back from the Jews, but they evangelize. Now, I want you to pay attention to just one verse and one word in this verse. At Iconium, Paul and Barnabas went, as usual, into the Jewish synagogue. That's where they did evangelism. Why? Because that's been effective for them. There they spoke so effectively that a great number of Jews and Greeks believed. What word do you think I want you to pick up? So and effectively. So effectively. Now, what does that tell you? Well, later in the chapter, we learn that it's God who opens the door for people. They talk about the grace of God opening doors and shutting doors. God had opened the door of faith for the Gentiles. So we know God is sovereign over salvation. We can't force people to be converted. If only we could. We can't. God chooses who is saved. That's what I firmly believe the Bible teaches us. But God gives us freedom and license in the way that we minister. Paul and Barnabas didn't speak ineffectively, they spoke so effectively. And God blessed that effective utilization of their resource. And so that's all it is. We're not trying to have a big theological thing saying, oh, you know, but to say that we don't need to do anything, that makes us what is called in the business hyper-Calvinists. And they're people who are like, oh, God's chosen, he's going to be saved, so we don't even need to talk at all. He's just going to save who he saved. Now, to view the Bible that way is to so critically misunderstand the Bible and to misunderstand God's purposes in us evangelizing. It means you've never read the Bible. So God wants us to speak. He controls how people will respond. He gives us freedom to do it badly or well. And I don't know about you, I want to do it well. I want to see as many people converted as I can. Now, the good news is the people most likely to be converted know you. That increases their rate by like 700% of being converted, okay? So all that means is that we need to think carefully about, hey, what's the best way for me to engage, you know, Bob or Judy or Muhammad or whoever it is that I know with the gospel? And what we've discovered in churches in Sydney is that the best way to do it is together, the word, over time, either at church or in a course. Does that make sense? Oh, sorry, you're going to say that, of course, if I say that makes sense, you're going to go, yeah, sure. But if it doesn't, feel free to come and ask or ask questions more on that, but I hope it's clear. Yeah,
good. A question about relationship evangelism in the sense of how important is it to have developed trusted, respected relationships with people before we start sharing the news about Jesus or inviting them to a church event or something, or how, in terms of how early in that process, is there wisdom in that?
What
regard?
A great question. Is relationship important in an evangelistic conversation? Yes and no. Okay, 50 of the 55 evangelistic conversations in the Bible and the New Testament are between complete strangers. Jesus didn't go up to the Samaritan woman and go, hey, let's hang out for a couple of weeks. Then I'm going to tell you about your husbands, you know? Didn't do that. Paul, he goes to Iconium, he preaches, then he stays. Okay, he preaches, then stays. Philip and the Ethiopian eunuch, they weren't pen pals, okay? They didn't know each other. Just went up, boom, he's in. So that's not to say relationship, having a relationship is bad, but it's just worth saying, hey, sometimes we can think, oh, I've just got to build this trust and this type of thing, and then that will give me permission to speak. When that's not biblically mandated. And in fact, what do we know from experience, many of us? Unfortunately, the closer we get with people, often the harder it is to evangelize them. Why? Because we really care what they think of us. And we're really scared about ruining the relationship. Now, what that means is this. It's great to evangelize people who know you and respect you. But sometimes that can be the hardest. And so, like you siblings or spouse, parents, whatever. Siblings, the hardest people to evangelize. Yeah, really difficult because they've seen it all. They know it all. They know the real you, not the fake news you. You know, and so you pray for friends for them. You're a faithful witness, but you also pray for them to get other Christian friends. But for others, you know, oh, I'm going to come off like a cult member if I go too strong here. So I do want them to know a little bit about me. I want to be friends, and I want to be friends with everyone. But I don't want to be friends thinking there's going to be a magical moment where they like me, they see me be so godly that they're just like, what must I do to be saved? That generally doesn't happen, although sometimes it does. Here's what's the best thing to do. Evangelize everyone. Do that. And that means the bus driver. It means the person at the servo. It means your spouse, your best friend, your next door neighbor. It doesn't mean evangelize everyone all the time. So if you've got a child, a sibling, whatever, you've tried to evangelize them, it hasn't worked. Okay, be kind to yourself. Okay, you don't need to put this pressure on yourself all the time. The most you can do is pray for them. And then once a year, give them a Christian book and say, you're an idiot, you won't read it. But if you do, there you go. You know, and just keep nudging. You'll be at each other's funeral one way or the other. So there's different ways we counter those things. But yeah, I think there's a bit of a fake thing of thinking, oh, I've got to build up this whole thing. And actually, you don't. And sometimes it can be unhelpful.
So that, I think sometimes if people are like me, that I feel like that example you gave earlier about the turn or burn person as an example of bad evangelism, that's not because they hadn't formed a relationship. It's because the contextualization was off and things. So sometimes we associate the bad evangelist as the person we haven't developed. Like you would never go up to the bus driver because that would be a bad way of doing it. But you're saying it's you can go up to the bus driver or the person.
Totally. It's just what you say.
Sorry, bus drivers here.
Yeah, bus drivers are the best. Sorry, we're using them because they're the best of us. Okay, so I want to say, so I'll give you an example from real life. So 2 weeks ago, I went on holidays to the Gold Coast and I set myself a challenge to have an evangelistic conversation every day with someone. Okay? And I was able to do it. But it was weird and funny, but actually also really simple. So when I've got eyes to see it, we're staying at a resort, everyone's got their shirts off, I'm in the spa bath with a guy, there was a bunch of us, not just two of us, okay? There's and he was a Lebanese guy, he had some religious tattoos. I start speaking to him about tattoos. Boom, we start talking about God. The next day, there's a guy with a Glasgow Rangers shirt on, which is the Protestant soccer team of Scotland. So I'm like, oh, Rangers. I hate soccer, okay? But I'm like, oh, Rangers. Oh, Protestants. If you don't know what that means, don't worry about it. And start a conversation. The next day, I was in...
How'd you go from soccer to Jesus?
Yeah, thanks, Annabelle. I said...
Can you text that, please?
Yeah, yeah. I'm sorry. Don't get ahead of me. No, but it is Rangers. Wow, mate, that's... I used to live in Northern Ireland and I would go see Linfield play, so we get to start talking about soccer. And from there, I'm deliberately hitting that piece because I know that the Protestant heritage of that team means there's a spiritual doorway for me to go there, which is to say, I can't remember exactly what I said, but it was something like, oh, so did you ever, you've been to the games? Yeah. Oh, did you sing the songs? Have you spent time over there? Yeah. What do you think of that big division of Protestants and Catholics? And so I'm just looking for any spiritual opening that way. We're having dinner, and in the Gold Coast, there's a Brazilians, the most beautiful group of people ever to immigrate to Australia, right? Physically amazing, but they come in, lovely, gorgeous people. They're like South Africans. They've got a high theistic, Christianized worldview. So everyone you meet will say they're a Christian, but largely Catholic or extreme Pentecostal. But there are some evangelicals, and there are Christians in all of those groups, by the way, but a lot of them not. But anyway, we're having dinner, and the waiter comes over, name tag, and I go, Rafa, whatever his name was. Are you from Brazil? It's like, yeah. And I said, oh, brother, we're about to say grace for dinner. Can I pray anything for you? Like, that's, what do you think my kids are doing? Dad, shut up. But what did Rafa do? He cried. Now, he's Brazilian, you know what they're like. Yeah, but what did it cost me? A little bit of pride? Now, where did it go? Oh, nowhere. But it may have. And so I just want to nudge doors like that. And that's very different to wearing a shirt saying, turn or burn, Rafa, blah, blah. And so I would offer that that's kind of, that's wise evangelism. I'm just nudging at doors and a spiritual conversation. This is the funniest one. Just because of time, I can't tell it really quickly. Except the last day, I was reading my Bible every day as a kind of putting the flag up publicly while the kids are swimming. Bit weird, but whatever. So I'm there. And on the last day, there's this guy every day who's walking around, massive, full body tattoos, big, got beard, shaved head, Viking. And I notice he's missing half of 1 foot. Okay? And so I'm like, I wonder if he's in the army, because a lot of guys who went to Afghanistan have lost limbs and stuff. But I'm intimidated by this guy, and I just like, On the last day, I'm reading the Bible. He comes over and he walks past me. And he goes, "Good on you, brother." And I was like, "Ooh!" So I jump up and I run over and go, "Oh!" We start talking, and I go, "Oh, I might have seen your foot. Okay, were you in the army?" And he goes, "Oh, no. I work with explosives, and I lost it, in an accident, workplace accident." I said, oh, bro, hectic. He wasn't a Christian, but he's interested in Jesus, all this stuff. I got talking. And he gives me his phone number. He sends me his number and his name. And his name is Tommy No Toes. Initials TNT. Okay? I'll show you. It's on my phone. Tommy No... Huh? Well, that's what he calls himself. TNT, Tommy No Toes. And he lost his foot with explosives. I'm just like, oh my goodness. But if I hadn't been sitting there reading the Bible, he would not have said anything. Now, there's just little things like that and it changes the whole perspective of life, do you see? If you're in the servo and you've got beautiful, and now listen, I don't want to make a trope racial thing here, but we know that there's a higher proportion of beautiful people from the subcontinent who work in service stations because they're coming in with very little money and they work in service, a lot of them. Now, not always, but sometimes. But that means, for me, I love people from the subcontinent. They're just the friendliest people and they love cricket, okay, often. Trope, but they do. So it just means when I come in, I've got an avenue. I'm like, oi, you like cricket? And sometimes they say no. I'm like, what's wrong with you? Why wouldn't you like cricket? And then I'm trying to see, is there anything here I can start a conversation? But it changes how I view life. And I'm just trying to think that way all the time. It improves my life. So it gives me a joy and a purpose and everything. And it's exhilarating. And I think that's the thing that I'm trying to push us towards. And I'm not trying to say having a course at church, by the way, should cancel you from reading the Bible with someone on your own or all the other ways you try evangelism. Do anything, everything, do it all. But at its core, churches that see the most people converted are partnered as a team together and funneling it towards one thing. If you do too many, it's like trying to start a fire with a magnifying glass across like a meter. You won't be able to do it. You need to bring it in nice and close on one thing. And actually, it just means the critical mass of people are there. They're going to meet more people. They meet more people at church. So there's just a social thing that works there.
This has been really helpful. We're not going to get through a lot of the questions. We'll work out a way to deal with some
of
those questions.
I'll be quicker from here.
Well, no, that's all right. A question here about someone who's finding it's hard. After starting a conversation, to continue that conversation another time. So maybe someone who shared the gospel with a person, I assume this is someone talking about a long-term relationship. They've had an opportunity, the wisdom about how often to bring it up. You might have shared it 3 years ago, 4 years ago, a year ago. I think a lot of us feel with our networks that we have a very established network. We might have tried once. How do we don't want to be the person who every day we come in to the office and talk about it.
Yeah, sure. Can I say, wonderful question, because it means you've tried before and all those sort of things. I'm here to testify to you that my conversion was as a result of watching a John Piper sermon on the internet. But was it? Or was it actually the result of a great wall of China, of pebbles, of a million conversations, including people who randomly I would meet, and I was sharing before with someone about a taxi driver in Tansville when I'm half cut, maggot off my face, who sobered me up with a gospel conversation and an invitation to church. And I walked out, tore up his card, and never thought about him until I became a Christian. You know, millions of little things like that. So we've got to understand that God works through the ordinary and through our attempts, even when we don't see the fruit, all that type of stuff. I would offer that the best principle to have in my life that I've found is to view evangelism like putt-putt golf. Okay, so in putt-putt golf, there's one aim. What is the aim? To get the ball where? In the hole. What is success in putt-putt golf? Ball in hole. Ball in hole. Now, whether it's 500 hits or one hit, my wife, who's strangely good at it, you're trying to get it in there. Okay, that's the aim. Now, some conversations will be a hole in one. It's pretty rare, but they do happen. If you throw it out there enough, like I do, you will have conversations that see people become Christians like that. It does happen. But most will be 500. But you don't know which is which. And so I want to say the most important thing is to, if you're in a longer-term relationship like that with someone, is that you don't compromise your faith. You don't pretend it doesn't matter. You still have it as part of your life. You talk about it. As Christmas comes up or carols come up or low-level invites like that come up, feel free to invite them. As I shared about my sister giving me a little Christian gift with another non-Christian, it just kept it on the agenda the whole time. And for me personally, I've got all my in-laws are non-Christians, that kind of stuff. I know that by being Christians, it's weird. And so that just means I need to hold my tongue and it will come up, okay? At family gatherings and that type of stuff, if you're with a lot of non-Christians. So it means I don't waste my bullets on political arguments. I don't give away what I think about politics to my non-Christian family members because I don't want to lose the relationship over something secondary. I want to keep it for the gospel. And that's been very, very complex, okay? But being able to go, I'm not going to mention it. I'm just going to wait because otherwise I want to use it. So for me, though, I just offer the wisest counsel the best advice I ever got about all types of evangelism is that it's not a monologue, it's a dialogue. And the best book on this is a book called Questioning Evangelism by Randy Newman. And it really puts forward the idea that Jesus evangelizes by asking questions. A good teacher, what must I do to be saved? What does he say back? Why do you call me good? Now, how would we respond? Well, you must do this, you must do that. Why do you call me good? You know, that there's this idea that actually we want to just find out what people, we want to get people thinking about what they believe. And so for me, it's just looking for little avenues about any spirituality, religion, whatever, and just asking questions when and where appropriate and praying for them continuously. Pray for your people. Who else is? It's you. So pray for people and then just be ready, you know, and that's how I'd offer it. But asking questions is really helpful.
This is the last one we'll do in this little time. We've got time to talk in groups. But this is a really great one, I think, maybe to finish the weekend with. What are some habits that you can recommend that help keep our perspective on eternity and God's kingdom? So we talked today about faith providing sight, and often the thing that stops us feeling that urgency is seeing that reality, like the guy with the telescope. what habits do you think can help us?
Thank you for that question. It is a wonderful question and a great one to end on. And I believe it's the core of evangelistic energy and our personal walk as Christians. Hebrews 12 captures the answer I want to give, and I'll just give you the first few verses of Hebrews 12, okay? Because what I want to offer here is that the idea of living for the future is not something that's given to us as a kind of get out of jail free, just don't worry about it, move on. It's actually the model for us of how to live like Jesus. So if you want to live like Jesus, then you live for the future. Listen to what Hebrews 12 says us. Let us throw off everything that hinders. Now, that doesn't mean sin. That's other unhelpful things that come into our lives. It could be an over-prioritization of family or career. So it's not necessarily sin, but it's hindering our spiritual growth and the sin that so easily entangles. And let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. Now, here it is. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Friends, what is the joy set before Jesus that enabled him to endure the cross? What is the joy that captured Jesus, which meant he was able to endure the Father, if you are willing, take this cup from me, pain? It's you. It's us. It's the joy of knowing us, of being reconciled, of our redemption and forgiveness. It's the joy of sitting at the right hand of his Father, of receiving the glory he deserves. But it's also the joy of knowing scumbags like us. And I've got to say that for me personally, I think I was chatting to Conrad earlier actually about the day-to-day grind of the Christian life. Part of the problem is expectation and reality, that we capture a kind of picket fence version of the Christian life, the middle-class Australian version of life with spirituality on the top. And I'm not calling for a radical, like, oh, no, become a hermit, okay? I'm not saying that. But I am saying this, that when Jesus says anyone would be my disciple, they must deny themselves, ambition, goal, desire, dead. Deny them. Take up their cross, how often? Daily. And follow me. Now, for me, I think that points us to a really clear understanding that there's no secret silver bullet of living faithfully and joyfully as a Christian. It is a struggle. To be a Christian is to suffer. And young people, can I just say very clearly, it's not to prosper and flourish. It's the opposite in the world's eyes. Do not think there's a version of Christianity where it's just going to be, oh, this is blissful. Oh, I'm like the Brady Bunch now with my family. We're all just together all the time. No, Jesus has come to divide. He calls us to die. It's very, very difficult, but it's also the greatest thing in the world. There's nothing like it. And so for me, I think it's a case of going, right, so I want to fix my eyes on Jesus. I want to actually have Jesus as my compass setting every day. So the habits of that are very simple. I love church. I never miss church. Not just because I have worked in churches. I would never, ever, 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 ever miss church. And it's not because I'm holy. It's because I'm not holy. I need church. I just do. I can't survive without meeting with God's people. I need it. And there's no reason that's better than church. Like, I just, church, God gathered people together. You need it. And the only people who think they don't need it the most. We need each other. You're not strong. Christian is a crutch. No, it's not. It's a wheelchair, you idiots. It's a stretcher. We need each other. So it's church. And it's understanding that reading the Bible and praying will never be easy for me. I never like doing it. It feels like a burden and a hassle. But I spot the symptoms when I stop. It's often my language. I start swearing a lot. I start kicking the dog. Well, she died actually yesterday, so I don't kick her anymore. But, oh, it's terrible. It's terrible. Let me tell you. It was terrible. But, and I feel, anyway, moving on from that. My anger, my all these things pop out. And the reason is that the Bible does stuff to our soul we don't even recognize it's doing as God cuts away at us and whatever. So I just offer that it's actually a daily thing. It is every day. There's no like big moment. Boom, I'm never going to struggle with that again. That's a guarantee you will struggle with it again. Okay, it's just a daily grind. You do it. Why? Because it's worth it. It's true. It's eternity. This world is not your home. And that needs to be the paradigm you view your money, the paradigm you view your career. The most important thing about you is not the corporation who pays your bills. Mamma mia. They'll move on when you're dead. The most important thing about you is that you're a son or daughter of God. It's not your children. Parents, our obsession with children does no service to them or to us. The most important thing about you is not that you're a parent. It's that you're a child. And the way to most love your child, a bit like in the aeroplane where the parent gets given the mask, you put on the mask before you put on your child's. Why? Because if you don't, you can't help. You need to focus your life on loving Jesus more. If you love Jesus more, you'll love your children more. And the core part of being a Christian is the end. John 21, when Jesus, he reestablishes Peter after denying him three times, and he asks him three questions. What were those questions? Conrad, where are you? What were those questions? Do you love me? And that's my final word for you today, my final question to you. Do you love Jesus? Do you love him? 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 And if you don't, you can. And as a Christian, if you're feeling distant, if you're feeling, he is here, always, ready. You can have as much of him as you want. No matter how far you've veered, no matter how bad your habits, your practices, no matter how much you're faking it for other people, mama, who cares? Do you love me? Have you done worse than Peter? Have you denied him on his way to the cross? If Jesus can forgive Peter, you think he can't forgive you? You're an amateur. Okay? Do you love me? Do you love me? And so I think that's the thing. Like it's, if Jesus is the crumbs, is one of a series of priorities in your life, it'll always be miserable. You'll be dragged kicking and screaming to heaven. And you'll get there and you're like, what was I doing? So get ready for heaven now. Focus on him. And stop me talking. I will talk all day. So thank you very much. Yep. Yep.
Dave, we're very thankful for you being here. And we're going to do some thank yous a little bit later. But just while you're here, we're so thankful for all you've done. And what we're going to do just for the next little few moments is... in terms, it'd be foolish for us as a weekend like this to not...